That's yours, that's mine. Okay. Thanks. We're kind of mid-publication, so I'm going to zip through a whole bunch of slides, and some of them are going to be kind of quick, and some of them are going to be up there just, you know, to demonstrate to you that we do actually have some data, but you're not going to be able to absorb all of it. But appreciate any questions that people have afterwards. We looked at the impact of the Central America Free Trade Agreement, which of course is an agreement with the U.S., on access to medicines for women in Guatemala. I don't have any financial conflicts on this issue, and I've told you what our question is. It's important. Guatemala is important among the six countries that were part of CAFTA because it's one of two countries that has a strong generic drug industry. And the agreement itself establishes strong intellectual property rules that are a departure, as I'll discuss, from what was in place in the past. The drugs affected by the new rules are more commonly used in the U.S. than in Guatemala, which is one reason we think it's relevant to us here in the U.S. and could have implications for policy here. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the pharmaceutical industry and intellectual property, then talk a bit about trade agreements and TRIPS, specifically Guatemala, look at what drugs are affected by the policies I'm going to talk to you about, and make some suggestions for policy change. Has anybody here, I've talked about this a bit in the past, has anybody here heard me talk about this before? No? Okay. I'll do my best to summarize what all this is about. The intellectual property rules have to do with access to and pricing for pharmaceutical products, and the context for this is that there's the main market for pharmaceutical products, of course, is in the developed world, where there are crises for the pharmaceutical industry, both in terms of price and quality and innovation. It's the most profitable industry in the world. Sometimes oil gets ahead of it. Only 15% of their revenues are used for research and development, 19% for profits. And other higher amounts for production and marketing administration, which is important because the intellectual property rules that I'm going to talk to you about are often justified on the basis that they encourage innovation. And we think from looking at how the revenues are spent that that's questionable. So the political strategy that we see is that the policy intent is to protect high prices in the U.S., look for higher prices in other countries, other developed countries, but also in developing countries like Central America, reinforce the intellectual property structure, look for markets among wealthy individuals and governments, and restrict the production and sale of generics. Intellectual property rules include patents, which give originator companies a market monopoly for about 20 years, during which they can sell without competition, which keeps prices high. One of the other policies that reinforces this market monopoly is their right to data and their right to protect the data that they use to establish the effectiveness of their product. The originator company has to conduct costly clinical trials on human beings that show that the product is safe and effective. Generic drugs don't reproduce those trials, but they rely on the data that were produced by the originator. Of course, they're very popular both in the U.S. and abroad, and they're less expensive because they haven't gone through all of that discovery process. A license is what allows either kind of company to sell and market a drug in a company, and a compulsory license is what a government may use if they think an originator company is blocking access through price or failure to register to a necessary drug. How do trade agreements fit into all of this? The trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights is one of several agreements at the international level that was negotiated through the World Trade Agreement in 1995. It stipulates that all member nations have to implement patents and patent rules by a particular period of time. Because these rules were being used by pharmaceutical companies to block access to affordable drugs in countries like South Africa, there have been other subsequent statements, such as the Doha Declaration in 2001, stating that countries can take action, such as compulsory licenses, to protect public health. The question then becomes whether this TRIPS agreement gives pharmaceutical companies all of the rights that they can possibly have, or whether more bilateral and regional agreements can give companies greater rights, in other words, stronger power to protect their products, to avoid competition and keep prices high. And this is sort of the breakdown of countries on either side of that discussion. One of the things that TRIPS Plus, I am so sorry. I'm just going to let that ring because it goes on for a while and I don't know how to stop it. I apologize. For countries like the U.S. that thinks that we should be able to go beyond TRIPS, there are different policies that we've put in place. Data exclusivity, again, is one of those. The protection of these data, keeping the data away from generic companies for a particular period of time, even if they don't have a patent. And there are other rules as well, but I'm going to focus on that one in this presentation. Guatemala, as you can see, is just south of Mexico. It's a very poor country with a lot of indicators of exclusion among women. CAFTA, and I'm sorry you couldn't see all of that, CAFTA grants greater monopoly rights to brand name pharmaceutical companies, including particular data exclusivity rules, which we'll talk about. There has been a tug of war in Guatemala about the adoption of these data exclusivity rules. As you can see, even before CAFTA was adopted in 2006, there was pressure from the pharmaceutical industry and a debate in their legislature about whether to adopt data exclusivity rules. And the data exclusivity periods went from 15 years to nothing to 5 years to nothing, and settled down at 5 years. Under CAFTA. Are people clear about what I mean by data exclusivity? That basically it's what if a generic company wants to take their, for want of a better term, a copycat drug to market, they have to use the originator's data to point to the regulators to those data and say, see, the originator company did it. We are not going to reproduce that. We're just telling you it's there. That's what they can't do with data exclusivity. We have a similar rule in the U.S., but because everything is patented in the U.S., it doesn't really matter. In countries without patents, data exclusivity is the way that is the road to monopoly for pharmaceutical companies. Generics are, because of this these data exclusivity rules, and once this rule is in place, the originator companies can choose which drugs to list as data as benefiting from data exclusivity. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what drugs have been listed to take advantage of this policy. There are 77 brand name drugs that have gained exclusive market access, depending on when they were listed, for either 5 years or 15 years. As a result of their being registered as data protected, they've been removed from the market, and generic versions of 16 drugs have been prevented from entering the market because regulators said, no, we already have a data protected drug that we're looking at. So what drugs are protected? For example, Caletra, an important second-line drug for HIV/AIDS, is data protected. That means that Guatemalans must pay the highest price for that drug. Crestor, a cholesterol-lowering drug very popular in the U.S., is also listed. We looked at because we were interested in the impact on women, we looked at the key causes of morbidity and mortality for women, which you can see up here, and I'll show you, we found a number of key drugs for these conditions that are data protected in Guatemala. And this just goes into detail on those conditions. In terms of mortality, the only thing I want to point out is that the order of the causes of death are different for women, children, and men. There's a slightly different order. They're roughly the same causes, but they have different access to medicines will have different impacts because of this. Drugs for common women's conditions are, quote, protected, and these include contraceptives and vaccines, drugs for pneumonia, diabetes, hypertension, cancer, and HIV/AIDS. And there's evidence that chronic illnesses that could be managed well with drugs account for major causes of death. And I'm just going to run through, there's about 11 of these, but just so that you can see, in the case of pneumonia and respiratory illness, there are three drugs that are data protected in Guatemala. And in one case, and this will be true for all of these drugs, data exclusivity will expire later in Guatemala than it does in the U.S. What that means is we can get access to the same cheaper generic drug in the U.S. before it will be accessible in Guatemala, which, of course, is a much poorer country. And that's just going into some of the detail, which we have available if you want to see it, about the health conditions and the manufacturers. For reproductive health, there's a contraceptive called Yasmin. There's calcium gluconate. Diabetes, there are seven drugs that are data protected in Guatemala. In one case, there's no data exclusivity in the U.S. In the case of four drugs, data protection will expire later in Guatemala than in the U.S. Similar for cardiac disease, cerebrovascular disease, cancer, and in some cases, these are drugs that reduce, that are better because they have fewer side effects, say from chemotherapy. Hepatitis B, urinary tract infections. Okay, yeah, I'll just tell you the names of these, that'll be fine. Acute diarrhea, ophthalmic conditions, rheumatoid arthritis, HIV/AIDS, including 5-protease inhibitors, which again are second-line drugs. And for some of these, again, data exclusivity expires later in Guatemala than in the U.S. This lists them. Several, and this gets to the question of why, there are several protected drugs that are going off patent in the U.S. In other words, these are drugs that will start selling for less money in the United States, which again is their pharma's main market. That they include Plavix for stroke prevention, and there are hundreds of esoteric new substances that have become patented as a result of CAFTA. We looked also, and I'll talk about this in another, we have more evidence about this for a different presentation, but basically we looked to see whether data protection affects the prices of medicines, and we saw that new drugs introduced under the IP rules seem to be targeted to the wealthy. Some, but not all, are clinical improvements of one sort or another. Clinical substitutes for the protected drugs where they're already on the market are less expensive than the protected drugs. There's a system that is probably familiar to most of you. The developing countries often have a different system of purchasing and distributing drugs than we do in the U.S. We were able to look at some of the lists of drugs in Guatemala, and where the government was listing both protected drugs and clinical substitutes, the protected drugs had a higher price. Despite Guatemala's implementation of these rules, the pharmaceutical industry has still lodged what they call a 301 claim against Guatemala, meaning that Guatemala could be charged with a trade dispute, and we could suspend some of their privileges in terms of lower tariffs and trading with the U.S. Because the pharmaceutical industry is not satisfied with the way they have implemented some of the IP rules in CAFTA. And one of the rules that they're upset about is a rule that gives them greater access to lower cost drugs for HIV/AIDS. So what can we do about this? We made some policy recommendations for Guatemala and CAFTA that the 301 watch list should not include Guatemala, that we should, and we hope that these recommendations may become more relevant after the next election. Both candidates have taken a more lenient position towards these rules than the present administration, that we could state that we will not enforce the TRIPS Plus rules, ensure the needed medicines are sold at affordable prices, look at technology transfer programs, which are to some extent inhibited by these trade rules. Take the TRIPS Plus IP provisions out of other pending agreements, and shift our focus in terms of trade policy away from protecting the industry and these drugs to looking at objectives that prioritize the human right to health and access to affordable medicines. And this is a slate of public health objectives that is on the CPATH website that runs through other objectives that we think we should be discussing in the U.S. in the next year. This is just to discuss some efforts that CPATH has made to try to influence the U.S. Trade Representative's policies by trying to get public health people on these, secret and private advisory committees that are mostly industry dominated. These figures are a little bit out of date, but from about 2 years ago, these were the industries that were advising the U.S. Trade Representative. The General Accounting Office has looked at these issues a couple of times and said that the U.S. has consistently opposed creating broader exemptions to TRIPS to protect public health, but instead has been calling for strengthening corporate rights, and has also said that it's important to have greater public health input into these policies. There's little evidence that the U.S. Trade Representative or federal agencies have determined whether these free trade agreements affect public health. So our research on these trade agreements is to look, gather data, and try to analyze what the effect has been, and also to try to work with other organizations to increase the voice of public health on trade policy. We invite you to join our listserv and to be in touch with us. I'll leave that up there for another 30 seconds. As Eckhart mentioned, I'm going to unfortunately have to leave a little early, but happy to take your cards if you have questions we can't get to here or would like to be in touch with us further. So I think we sailed in. Thank you very much for your attention, and we'll take a question or two now.
Yeah, we absolutely. Have,
okay.
Thank you, Ellen, and let's take a few minutes.
Could you let me know who you are? Okay.
I'm curious if, not in the context of Guatemala, but generally where you work, if you've seen any protections that increase the price of contraceptives or any contaminants.
Yasmin is one of the data protected drugs, and I do have data on the price, and it is more expensive than other comparable contraceptives. I mean, the question then becomes, is there a marketing campaign to convince people to use this drug, and then it's better than other drugs? I mean, those are things we haven't looked at, but it is on the list, and it is more expensive. Yeah.
Good question.
Yeah. Do people hear the question? Is there an attempt to monitor the effect on health status and on overall government spending? We would love to do this. I think it's really will take some additional effort, but our funders and we would be interested in seeing that happen. So it's a question of just sort of teasing out the different factors and looking at getting reliable data on what's happening with health status and government funds, but it would be nice to do.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.